The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Nosebleeds, your WFUV Sports home for all news around Major League Baseball and for the New York Yankees and New York Mets. I am Tucker Austin, joined by Grace McCarron, Kurt Sippel, and Vanessa Kosuda for a bit of a special episode here. First episode post-trade deadline. The trade deadline this year was August 3rd, and it's now Thursday, August 6th as of this recording. So a couple of days beyond the trade deadline, teams starting to settle in with their new acquisitions or settle in with guys who have departed. Before we get into a pretty packed show with all the moves that we had, how are you guys doing today? Grace, we'd start with you.
I'm good. Mets just completed their first road sweep of the year. So that's super exciting after, you know, getting rid of everybody. But I'll take the wins where I can get them. If the August and September Mets want to make things interesting, I'm all for it. They won't make things interesting, but you know, if they want to be fun, that would be great. But I'm good. I have my last day of work tomorrow, so that's kind of sad. But yeah, I'm good.
There you go. But now you can work for us.
Exactly.
So it works out. Kurt, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. The Mets, watching that game was very encouraging. I think playoff push is in the picture. No, it's not. I wish it was. That would be pretty fun. Back 18 games and make it all the way back. It starts with the Yankees hopefully sweeping the Braves. You never know.
That's the one time we'll say hopefully the Yankees sweep someone.
I was withholding, as a Yankee fan, I was withholding hope that the Mets could just run into a good run of baseball all the way up until the All-Star break, pretty much. But you know, deadline came and went. The Mets were like uber sellers at the deadline, so nothing really much you can do other than say the rest of the season should be fun with all the young guys. But we'll get into that. VK on the road, in the car right now. How are you doing today?
Driving home. I'm doing the 50-minute commute, but I wouldn't have it any other way right now just to be able to talk about baseball. I'm sad but hopeful with the Yankees right now. Just with George Lombard, I have a little bit of hope, but we should not have lost that series to the Cardinals. But, you know, there's a lot to talk about on that end. A lot to talk about with the trade deadline, and I'm just excited to get into it since it's been a minute since I've been on a Nosebleed. So happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you back. Happy everybody's doing all right considering the circumstances. I mean, the first thing we got to cover is the big fish, Tarek Skubal. He is no longer on the Detroit Tigers. He is now a Los Angeles Dodger, at least for the back end of this season. If it turns into a rental, it is one of the most expensive rentals that I have seen in quite some time. But the Dodgers have kind of gotten themselves into a position as an organization where when they bring guys in who would normally be rentals for other teams trying to go after a quick World Series in just the same season, the Dodgers have become an organization where players want to stick around. They want to stay in this organization. And we've seen guys that they pick up re-sign massive contracts, formerly with a lot of deferred money. Now that kind of that trend is sort of going away, and certainly might get struck down in the next CBA. But man, Tarek Skubal of the Dodgers, I mean, it's kind of something that we all expected, I imagine. I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on this move overall, because I know there are some strong opinions, at least between the four of us. Vanessa, though, I think you've expressed the most concern over this out of the four of us so far. So I want to let you go first. Thoughts on the Skubal deal, either from the perspective of the Dodgers, perspective of the Tigers, perspective of everybody else, or maybe a little bit of everything. What do you think?
Yeah. I might go on a little bit of a tangent here, so sorry, guys. I do have a lot of thoughts, though. I'll admit, I actually was pretty surprised that the Dodgers picked him up you know, I didn't really even see that there was room in their starting rotation. But, you know, the Dodgers are the team to be right now. You know, you have all of this money. You can basically do whatever the heck you want. So I'm not surprised. And Scooble definitely wants to win. So I'm not surprised in the sense that he ended up taking that deal. You know, I thought he was going to go to another American League team, but that's just me. But I think the craziest part about it is who he got traded for and what other offers were on the table or what the Tigers were asking for. What they were saying was that if the Yankees were to trade for Tarik Skubal, you were going to have to give up Schlittler, Rice, and then I think Spencer Jones was in the mix as well. Now, you're taking away three. Okay, you know, he's a back-to-back Cy Young winner, so I could understand the value there. But what I don't understand is that the Dodgers were able to trade away three prospects for him. I find that absolutely ridiculous that the Tigers accepted that. They basically traded Tarik Skubal away for a bag of chips, which I just find to be absolutely ridiculous. But that being said, you know, he had his first start against the Cubs. Dansby Swanson went yard, which made me a little happy. It was actually just in Chicago, so I got to see the Cubs play. But I was actually happy to see that the Dodgers kind of struggled a little bit. But yeah, no, I mean, I think the trade, especially with what the Tigers got in return and what they were asking for, is just like two completely different things. And I wonder what's going to happen now, especially with the lockout. A lot of people are basically saying that this is going to drive us more into a lockout because, again, the Dodgers just can't be stopped with all the money that they have. And these lower income teams can't even, you know, afford Tarik Skubal, or they're just not, you know, they're just kind of doing the bare minimum. But yeah, I don't know what this is going to do for next season. I don't know how much of an argument the Dodgers are going to be in, but you know, only time will tell, truly.
Yeah. And I think the biggest issue for me, you touched on it a little bit, was maybe not necessarily that other teams couldn't afford Tarik Skubal, especially because of the return that the Tigers wound up getting for him from the Dodgers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's three prospects, and prospects are certainly valuable, especially from a system like the Dodgers, who have one of the best, if not the best, farm system in baseball. So getting anybody from out of that system is usually a win, but like three players for Tarik Skubal,
and with the likelihood that he'll resign. By the way.
Yeah.
Two of them being all-stars.
I just don't understand how it couldn't be how a larger package doesn't come out of that. If you're the Detroit Tigers, you got to get something back from that. But I think the big issue isn't necessarily that teams can't afford Tarik Skubal; it's that they're not willing to sort of risk the prospects the same way the Dodgers are.
Afford was a bad bad word for me to use. I was just saying it was more in the sense that the effort really isn't there from the owners, that they're not, you know, they're not really willing to give up anything either. So, you know, you saw there was, I guess, the owner in the Reds said, oh, we're just gonna look at the trade and we're gonna look at what we can possibly offer just for a story, like for a headline, which that means there's little to no effort. You're just doing it for, you know, just for the heck of it. But it's just, you know, it's just that's why there's always this argument of whether there should be a salary cap, salary floor, or both, you know. It's just, and it's becoming increasingly more prevalent, especially with all the talks that are going on between the owners and the Players Association and anyone who's involved in that deal.
Yeah, and I think the biggest issue in terms of like from the player's perspective, when a deal like this happens, especially if Skubal does re-sign with the Dodgers, it's likely going to be for a lot of money, they have so many guys already eating up huge chunks of payroll, highest payroll in baseball for a reason. But that shows the players that like this money exists. And if you wind up with the right ownership group like the Dodgers have, who are willing to spend money, the money is there for them. And so they don't want a salary cap, because if there is a salary cap, then that money that does exist will no longer be allocated to players in the future. And so like the player's biggest position is that they want to be able to be paid what they are worth and what these ownership groups believe that they're worth, rather than have every player's value in effect be capped by the fact that owners can't spend X amount of money at the top of the cap. But Kurt, Grace, I want to bring you guys into this too. Kurt, we could start with you here now. What are your thoughts on this situation with Skubal of the Dodgers? Kind of in a similar vein, like pick a perspective if you want. What do you make of all this?
Well, I don't actually think it's as bad as everyone thinks. He is a rental player at the time. He's only there for, he can only be there for potentially the next few months for a World Series push for the Dodgers.
Yeah, I saw something on MLB Network they were talking about. It's like he only has like, they paid three prospects for effectively like 400 to 500 pitches in the regular season from
Skubal.
That's
my point. That's why I think everyone's kind of overblowing this trade to the point where I don't think it's as crazy as everyone thinks. That's why I don't think a lot of teams wanted to get rid of their prospects. For example, the Brewers also have great prospects. Maybe not on the same scale as the Dodgers, but you don't want to get rid of your entire prospect pool to make one push at the World Series. Well, I'll say that this is one of the most open pushes to the World Series that you can make at the moment. By trading those prospects away, I'm not going to compare it to Javi Baez with the Mets, because that was a very different moment. But you can be trading someone that may not pan out, might not be as good, or you might not win. And if that happens and he ends up leaving, a PCA can go somewhere else and have an MVP level season in a few seasons from now. And you're going to be looking at yourself, kicking yourself, because you weren't able to make a run at the World Series like you felt you did by adding that player. Don't get me wrong, the Dodgers have MVPs up and down and Cy Young winners up and down their roster. But at the end of the day, it is still a rental. And the Dodgers can afford to give away that, can afford to give that rental up, because they don't really care about the prospects. They want to win now, and they want to keep winning now because they're set up to do that. That's why I do not think it is as big of a deal as people are trying to make it out as, because he is a rental pitcher that might not re-sign. Yes, he might re-sign. We might have a salary cap in baseball next year, but no one knows what's going on right now. It's all a big mystery. So at the end of the day, you have to work with the pieces that you're being given, and holding on to your prospects might not be the worst idea if you don't think that you're going to be able to win at the moment.
There's a few groups that I'm unhappy with, and none of them are the Dodgers. The first one, I would say, just generally at this trade deadline, the Milwaukee Brewers did not make it seem like they want to go to the World Series, which I think they are capable of. I know the big bad Dodgers are standing in their way, but like we talk about, you know, you don't want to give up prospects for a rental. If you have any notion that you can win the World Series this year, you have to go for it. There's a chance that the Brewers are under 500 next year. There's a chance there's no baseball at all next year. Go for it. The Brewers have never gotten to, like, they haven't gotten to the World Series. They haven't made any splashes recently. You have to go for it at some point. Like, and then you can't sit here and complain, like, hey, the Dodgers, they just get everybody. Oh, darn, everyone wants to go to LA. Like, no. Like, you have to eventually. And also, here's another thing. We talk about these three prospects for the Dodgers. River Ryan is 27 years old. He's barely a prospect at this point. That guy is halfway through his big league career. He's probably not going to be anything special at this point if we haven't heard his name already in the big leagues. Like, that's the fact of the matter. So if that's what the Tigers were accepting here, like, why wasn't everybody else in the mix here? Like, it seems like they weren't. That's what's making me mad, because you guys were talking about how, like, you know, the initial thoughts for a trade for Skubal included, like, everybody's top prospect, you know, a Cam Schlittler type. Like, that's not what happened here. And, you know, the Dodgers do have one of the best farm systems in the league, but there's a lot of great prospects. And eventually, we don't know what prospects are going to turn into. There's been a lot of really hyped prospects who don't become good players at all. I mean, we're gonna talk about Anthony Volpe, but like Anthony Volpe's was
Yeah,
a
I want to
40,
get into that soon.
but like that was a pretty highly hyped prospect, and now he's back
Yeah.
in the minors. Like, you know, like these don't, they don't always work out. So you have to go for it. And I'm mad at the Tigers for, because why would you accept this trade? We were talking about them possibly going to the World Series like 2 years ago, and now they're kind of just laying down, being like, "Well, darn, we tried, and we know we can't re-sign Skubal," which is true. And they were just, they didn't accept what they should have accepted. So I'm not mad at the Dodgers. I don't really know if I would call this like a money thing. It's a trade. Like, it's a money thing when we get to the offseason and he's signing the huge contract that he's inevitably going to sign, and then we can have that conversation. But I would never blame the Dodgers for trying to win. That's what you're supposed to do. And yeah, it's annoying to everybody else. I certainly don't like defending the Dodgers, but like, yeah, it's annoying, but it's what you're supposed to do. They did the right thing. I think they got away with a lot with that group of players. They're none of them. I mean, there's a couple of good prospects, but like, there's no major leaguers in there. I was expecting Emmett Sheehan to be gone, and he's not even like an ace, but they didn't get one major leaguer back. Like, eventually, it's like, why were there not other teams in the mix there? I'm not mad at the Dodgers at all.
What's most insane to me is that's the return that the Tigers got, and it seems like there should have been a better option for them out there. And it wasn't for a lack of other teams trying, because like we saw the Rays and the Brewers both try to kind of make up for the fact that they lost out on Skubal. The Rays went and got Freddie Peralta at an extreme discount compared to what they would have paid for Tarek Skubal. The Brewers went out and managed to get two pitchers off of the St. Louis Cardinals, Dustin May and Jojo Romero, in exchange for two prospects. So that they gave up fewer prospects than the Dodgers did and got more pitchers by number back, but just nobody who's even in the same ballpark as Tarek Skubal. So to me, these moves almost felt a little bit empty. Like, oh, we didn't get Tarek Skubal, but it has to look like we're still doing something. So
Yeah.
here's Dustin May, Jojo Romero, Freddy Peralta. And then like the Rays and Brewers kind of say, well, we did all we could. We tried. And I think that the status of next year is informing a lot of these decisions. If there is no baseball next year, if this agreement between the players and the owners and Major League Baseball does not go through and we actually lose a portion or all of next year, that's value for some of these guys that were getting moved at this deadline. Like if you lose a full year next year, say you're the Milwaukee Brewers, you give up a bunch of prospects in exchange for Tarek Skubal, manage to re-sign him, but then lose a season of prime Tarek Skubal just siphoning money off of you. You're out those prospects, and you have to wait a full year before you actually get to experience Tarek Skubal pitching for your team. So, if they don't win the world, if they make that Tarek Skubal trade, the Brewers, and they don't win the World Series, it's a complete disaster for them. So, I think they kind of just looked at it and said, we can either get Tarek Skubal, and if we don't win the World Series, it's a complete organizational meltdown, or we can kind of let Skubal walk, try to build him in the aggregate, and then not have a full-on collapse if it doesn't work out. Like they basically hedged their bets for this season by not getting Tarek Skubal, and I think the status of next season informs a lot of that. But I mean that's clearly the biggest move, not from one of our metro area teams in this trade deadline. There were plenty of other big moves too. Just in the Mets division, the Phillies went out and got Luis Arraez, and that certainly helps their lineup in terms of the batting. But there's been a big discussion about defensively how they're going to make that work out. A lot of guys shifting, and possibly Bryce Harper heading back to the outfield. But let's talk about the Mets before we get into the Yankees, because there was a big selling deadline for the New York Mets. Freddie Peralta gone to the Rays in exchange for three prospects. Clay Holmes gone to the Cubs, as well as Tyrone Taylor, in exchange for a prospect. Luke Weaver gone to the Pirates in exchange for a prospect. Brooks Raley in division to the Philadelphia Phillies for a couple of prospects as well, and also Huascar Brazoban. So, I mean, we have two of the Mets beat reporters in here with us, Grace, Kurt, whichever you guys want to take this, wants to take this one. The Mets, as Grace mentioned at the top, the Mets swept the Guardians immediately after the trade deadline. So kind of odd with the result there, but I think it's kind of exciting with all of these guys they're bringing up from AAA, especially his name escapes me at the moment, but that reliever who kind of jumps up off the mound and celebrates strikeouts. So I've seen all over social media while he was in the minor leagues. But, you know, Grace, we could start with you here. What did you think of this deadline? Exactly what you were expecting, maybe a little bit more. What are your thoughts?
It is pretty much exactly what I was expecting. I would have liked if they held on to a couple of the guys who are still under contract for next year. Luke Weaver is still under contract next year. Clay Holmes, I know he's been hurt for the vast majority of this year. He's still under contract next year. I would have liked to see that. And I know nobody's sure if there's going to be a season next year. I think as a baseball team, you have to operate like there is a season next year. And the Mets have said, David Stearns has said, we are going to compete next year. And now you're heading into the offseason, which is already shrouded in mystery. And there's not a lot of guys in that bullpen that you can rely on. The starting rotation is a lot of young guys who, like, I mean, Nolan McLean is very solid. Christian Scott has been very solid. Zach Thornton, we've had like five starts from. Sean Manaea has been great lately, but we know he's been struggling in the past. Like, these are a lot of question marks. And that was kind of the problem coming into this season. And look where we are now. So I would have liked if they kept some of those sure things. I'm going to call Luke Weaver a sure thing. I'm going to call Clay Holmes a sure thing at this point. But, you know, it was definitely what everybody expected. I also would have liked if they had found a way, and I, you know, we don't know what the market would have been for him or what the return would have been, but if they could have traded Luis Robert, I think that would have been good, because he's, now there's a little bit of a logjam with these outfielders. Well, not logjam, because Soto's hurt right now, so they're shifting around the outfield positions a little bit, so AJ Ewing is losing some time in center field to put Robert there. And I don't love that. I would like to see more of AJ Ewing in center, because he's been very solid and he's also probably going to be on the team long term, and Luis Robert isn't. So I would have liked if that trade happened too, but I was happy that they kept both their catchers. I thought that was good. I like our catcher room. But yeah, it was a bummer. Obviously, a lot of those guys have been with the team for a while, and even the ones who haven't have very nice things to say about their time on the Mets, which was nice, especially considering the last 2 years and how they've gone. But yeah, it was about what I expected, but it was still a bummer.
I completely agree with Grace. I think she kind of said everything that I wanted to say, other than I'm impartial to Luis Robert, because I still think that he might be really good. I know he hasn't proved much just because of injury and everything else that has gone on with him. And I just still think that Luis Robert there's something in there that he could be such a much better ball player. And I don't think he has much value, as you were saying, Grace, where you could have traded him really anywhere. And it really sucks to see all those guys go, because it felt like the fun was with them a lot of the time. But you need to swap out the old and bring in the new for some stuff, especially when the team just has not gone anywhere this season. And, you know, it's okay to kind of call it a wash. I mean, they just swept three in a row in Cleveland. I'm not saying that that actually means anything, but you could see that the vibes on the team might be a little bit better right now. They were talking about that even with the pitchers were, I think Mike Thornton on the broadcast today was talking about how he feels very included with Sean Manaea being the veteran, including all the pitchers and those guys. And it seems like the vibes are pretty high right now with the team that they have assembled. It's a young core. So at the end of the day, the Mets are building towards something, and that's all you can ask for a team that right now is at the bottom of their division. As long as you see build, that means that there's actually actively something happening in the organization to win, because you're building up these guys maybe for trading. You've traded for a ton of prospects. I sent Grace on Instagram. It was a Instagram post from the Cyclones, the Mets single A team, was Who are all these guys? Seriously, our whole team is brand new because their entire single A roster is pretty much revamped after the Mets finished all those trades. So new faces on the new faces in every division of Mets baseball. Why not next year if you're looking towards that? And why not more fun this year? I mean, as if fun can bring people into the ballpark, the Mets know how to do that. So why not?
A lot of new prospects for the New York Mets, and it's going to be interesting in their minor league system. But at the same time, not what the fans, I think, were looking for out of a new ownership group. They were promised success in the immediate future when Cohen first took over. But now a big sale at the trade deadline and a lot of looking to the future. So kind of back to business as usual, almost, I would say, for the New York Mets looking ahead. But now let's switch gears over to the New York Yankees, who had, I would argue, a similarly disappointing deadline to the New York Mets. The only disappointment there being that they had to sell at the deadline. I don't think they did a bad job in their selling, but the Yankees were buyers at the deadline, as they usually are year over year. And the big conversation for the last 2 to 3 weeks has been whether or not they were going to address the catching position, because Austin Wells is having a career bad year at the plate. And they've been trying other options between J.C. Escar and Ally Sanchez behind the dish to try and find anything offensively from that spot on the field. But lo and behold, the Yankees do not address catching. And, you know, the biggest option for them was probably Adley Rutschman. When it came down to it, when it was finally, you know, made known that he was available from the Baltimore Orioles. But I would argue in classic Red Sox fashion and a little bit Orioles too, some inter-American League East collusion to screw over the New York Yankees. The Orioles send Rutschman to Boston and the Red Sox pick up a switch hitting catcher when they are arguably the hottest team in baseball right out from under the Yankees, who are going to stick with Austin Wells for the remainder of this season and for the foreseeable future. My biggest issue with this is this feels so similar to the entire saga that has been Anthony Volpe. And we mentioned him earlier in the show. We were definitely going to talk about it because now George Lombard Jr. is up and he is impressing defensively at shortstop. All the hitting, I'm sure, will be there. It's only been a few games. He had a homer in his first game. I don't know how you can start any better than that. But defensively, it just looks like a completely different, it looks like a different team overall when you have a guy that smooth playing shortstop. But Vanessa, we could start with you here, another Yankee fan, as am I. This was a deadline where the Yankees addressed a lot of the issues that didn't seem as pertinent, I should say. They're still missing Aaron Judge, who has recently been cleared for light physical activity. They're still missing Giancarlo Stanton, and there is no real word on him, aside from a couple of live ABs. Still waiting on Cody Bellinger, who will probably be back at the end of August at best, early September or mid-September, probably at worst. In response, they picked up Elliot Ramos from the Giants, an all-star a couple of years ago. Not a terrible pickup there if you're trying to fill outfield depths. Luis Garcia Jr., also, he is third in the majors in slugging this year and having a huge breakout season. So the Yankees add him to the lineup for a little bit of thump that they've been missing with guys like Judge and Stanton. But Vanessa, what did you think of this trade deadline from the Yankees? Is there something that they should have done that they didn't do? Or was this kind of almost just barely enough?
I'm not going to lie to you. I was not expecting much. I just really wasn't sure what was on the market. I'm really happy with them getting Garcia. You know, I think that's something that's great for their lineup, especially when you're missing a bat like Judge and even Bellinger, who can contribute as well. Elliot Ramos, I think, is just a good, you know, good filler spot. Contributes when he can. We're obviously dealing with a little bit of an outfield issue just because we have two of our main outfielders out. I was hoping that we would get Adley Rutschman, but you know, of course, the Red Sox took him. But also, you know, he's not even having that great of a year either. You know, I don't know how much he would have been able to contribute. I was hoping that they might have been able to address the reliever situation, but they didn't. They just got rid of Jake Bird, which I'm kind of happy about that I don't have to see him in
the... And to be fair, they offloaded Camilo Doval as well. And
yes.
got anything back for him, which to me was shocking. But
the fact that they got two people,
the Pirates
back
were
for
interested.
Him, yes, the Pirates are actually, you know, trying to fix up their bullpen. So, you know, I was pretty surprised that they actually sent him to the Pirates. I wasn't even sure he was even going to be traded.
And, fixing your bullpen, but they traded and you him. Trade for Camilo Doval.
Listen, I think it's the same issue that we've, you know, you and I talked about at the beginning of the season. With, and you can even just argue it with all the shortstop stuff. It's just that pressure that the bullpen often has from those toxic Yankee fans. But, you know, the fact that we got two players for Doval, I think is a win. But yeah, I was not expecting much. I'm actually kind of glad we didn't pick up Scooble. I didn't think there was any, if that was not necessary. I think I actually would have been upset if we picked him up, because I just, you know, whoever was going to be given up for that, I just, you know, whatever. But
I mean,
yeah,
more than
again,
likely it would have wound up being Lombard. More than likely would have been Lombard in a package with some other highly touted prospects in the Yankees organization.
Right.
And
exactly.
Again,
and
it
so kind of
follows from
the
Volpe situation. The Yankees are married to their prospects for whatever reason. They
yeah.
are just so, they have so much belief in their guys that they bring up through their system. It's the reason why Austin Wells is still the everyday catcher on this team.
Yeah, I'm very frustrated with that situation. The fact that, you know, I appreciate the loyalty. I do. However, you know, like we're seeing with the Volpe situation, and it's not like we even really have any other options for catchers, but something's got to give at some point. And I think Volpe being sent down to the minors now, it feels almost like too late. Like the damage has already been done in a way. I am happy though that they actually did make the switch. I was not expecting that. This is actually, I'm going to tell you guys a funny story. So what was it when he got called up on Tuesday, right? I think so.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. So I overslept. I almost missed my alarm. But thank God I work for my mom. So she woke me up and she's like, you got to go. So I'm running downstairs. Then all of a sudden I open Instagram and I see Volpe gets sent down. Dominguez gets sent down and Lombard Jr. gets called up. And I'm like, what the heck just happened? Like, what did I miss? I was very surprised, because if you looked at any of, you know, the Talking Yanks shows and when they've had Boone on, Boone was like 120% backing Volpe, basically saying that he's going to stay. He's the shortstop. He's not changing, all of that. And now he's done a complete 180 flip, saying that George Lombard Jr. is going to be the everyday shortstop and that Volpe's going to get reps at second, when literally a couple of months ago, he's like, Volpe's not playing second at all. He's staying at shortstop, which, you know, kind of frustrates me that we're kind of getting like, we're not getting the, just like the same story. It's kind of a sense that just Boone just keeps switching up what the narrative is. But I'm glad that they made the change, especially with what we've seen from Lombard. I love how he plays defensively. I don't think he tries, you know, he's made some pretty cool plays, but I don't think he tries to do too much. You know, there's been too many instances where Volpe has just overcomplicated a play, which ends up just being an absolute, some form of an error, or just causes more damage on the base path. But it's just like, it's been constant, and we can't have that as a shortstop, when, especially when shortstops are so crucial to the defense, you know. And it's just, Lombard's quick. He just makes a quick, simple extension of the arm and he's got the ball, you know, makes a quick, simple play. He doesn't overcomplicate it. And that's what I like from a shortstop. Yes, you can say that a shortstop's got a lot of finesse. You can, you know, really have a lot of finesse in that position, but I've always been someone that doesn't like to overcomplicate things. And that's why I like Lombard. And also, he's contributing from the hitting perspective. You know, he got a really amazing home run. I was so happy for him when he hit it. You know, it was great. But then again, you know, I'm hoping that he stays consistent. It's just the Yankees are just probably going to be the same story in the playoffs where they're just a first round exit until we make some drastic change when it comes from the catching perspective and even some other areas defensively and in the lineup. But I just don't know what that is yet.
Yeah, I would say I agree with you for the most part, except that I think the Yankees ceiling is much higher than that when you still consider the injuries that are still, or the injured guys who are still missing. This, like, we can't let the trade deadline buzz kind of derail the general Yankee narrative that has existed for the entirety of this season. And I've been rehashing it over and over again anytime I've appeared on air. It's been, they're waiting for these guys to come back. They're waiting for Judge to come back. They're waiting for Bellinger to come back. They're waiting to get, like, fully healthy, no pitch cap Max Fried, and to get Carlos Rodon back. Like, this is a team that on paper, when fully healthy, looks very, very formidable, especially when you add a guy like Luis Garcia to the lineup. I'm excited to see what the new guys can do without the old. If that makes any sense, kind of give them almost a trial run to see, like, hey, like, you guys are stepping into a space where you need to be our producers immediately. Right. And then move down the line where they kind of sink back a little bit in terms of, like, who's the number one option to knock in runs. It could create a really like a highly competitive lineup. When it comes to the hitting side of things, defensively, I 100% agree with you. I'm not as concerned anymore now that they have a guy as smooth as George Lombard at shortstop. I think, like, you saw the same effect happen when Jose Caballero was playing shortstop, the way that he does it. It rubs off on the rest of the team when you have a middle infielders, I would say, but also specifically a shortstop who is really confident in himself and simplifies the game. I think it just spreads across the entire field. So it makes me really happy that he's good defensively. And I was really happy to see him get a hold of a curveball for that first home run. He can hit the breaking ball. So that was established very early on.
Yes.
But quickly too, I want to get, if you guys have any thoughts, Grace or Kurt, Kurt, we start with you this time. Any thoughts on the Yankees deadline moves? Maybe scathing reviews coming from, a pair of Mets fans. This was a deadline where the Mets technically made more moves than the Yankees.
The scathing review is you needed a catcher and you didn't get a catcher. I think that was the biggest deal that you could really say, more than anything. How disappointed you could be that you got outbid by the Red Sox for a catcher, got an outfielder with a long-term contract, which is good. But at the end of the day, I like the addition of Garcia a lot. But I think the catcher position was the thing that you needed the most. I don't think George Lombard Jr. is going to be the long-term answer for, like, he comes up and now, boom, the entire thing is fixed. He definitely will improve your defense. I was there when he hit the home run in Yankee Stadium, so that was pretty cool. But at the end of the day, is I think you needed to shore up your offense a lot more, especially with questions about Aaron Judge's health, that you don't really know what's going to happen. And Luis Garcia Jr. is a great person for that middle ground where he's going to hit quite a lot. But you need someone that is going to help you with that lineup that you haven't really been able to find. And I'm not going to say it's the same as Juan Soto, but you haven't been able to find anywhere similar to what that lineup was like when you had Juan Soto and Aaron Judge together.
Yeah, Kurt, I'm going to agree with you on that. That's kind of why I took the position that I took, was just because you don't know how Judge is going to come back. You don't know how Bellinger is going to come back. You don't know how Stanton's going to come back. Yes, on paper, they look like a very, very good team and a very competitive team. But when you're out for an extended period of time, it can definitely affect things. And, you know, I try to be optimistic with the Yankees, but it can be hard when, especially when the dreams are kind of crushed, when, you know, they don't come back the way you expected.
I agree with the catcher thing. I also think they should have gotten another reliever. Like, they got rid of Camilo Doval and Jake Bird, and I know like they had their issues this year, but they are at least bodies in the bullpen. And we saw like the day after the trade deadline that they made Angel Chavilly give up like three home runs in an inning, and like he had to stay in because they didn't have anybody. Like, that's, you don't want to do that down the stretch. I would have liked to see that. The catcher thing, yes, they should have gotten a catcher. But I do kind of see where that was not going to happen for them. The Twins obviously decided not to sell, so Ryan Jeffers was not on the table. Hunter Goodman is like, because he plays at Coors, that's kind of questionable, and he probably would have required a lot of capital. And then Adley Rutschman, like, yes, it's a bummer that the Red Sox got them, like swiped him away from them, but he's also like, he's got a wrist injury. Like, you don't know. You still don't really know with him either. So, like, yes, Austin Wells, terrible season. Ollie Sanchez, also not really a, great backup option either. So, yeah, they should have gotten a catcher in a perfect world, but I also can see why they didn't. But I was happy they called up George Lombard finally. He's kind of I feel he's revitalizing them a little. And I liked Luis Garcia. That was good. He's a great slugger. And then he had that great moment in the game the other night before they lost. But not really sure about the Helly Ramos acquisition. I don't really feel like that was needed. They didn't really need an outfielder. I know about like the injury stuff, but he wasn't. I don't think he was really the guy. But that's okay. I think they definitely did not address all their needs, and that was very unpopular in Yankee land. When I went to the office the next day, there were a lot of unhappy folks there. So, yeah, it wasn't a failure like some people are calling it, but it wasn't a success necessarily either. But the George Lombard thing is kind of a nice distraction if, the trade deadline proves to be something that's a problem. But I would say for a team that is gunning for the World Series, that is one of the top three teams in the American League, even with the Red Sox totally surging for like the past month and a half, even with the Rays being good, they're still very good, the Yankees, even with these injuries. They can make noise, but this is not really the trade deadline of a team that thinks they can win the World Series, in my opinion. I think they should have done a little bit more, and I feel like that's been a theme with the Yankees of recent years. We hear, oh, the Yankees, the best team in the American League, they're going to go right to the World Series and maybe, trounce whoever comes out the other side, but they haven't for a long time now. And this trade deadline doesn't really make me much more confident, especially because we still don't. I know Aaron Judge resumed light activity. We don't know when he's going to come back. It could be late September, and by then it's like, well, he might be in third place in the AL East. So, yeah, it's kind of a complicated situation with them. There's a lot of moving parts because of all the injuries too. But yeah, I don't love their trade deadline.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree. All of you guys mentioned the lack of a move to address the bullpen, and I think that outside of the catching situation, I think not addressing the bullpen was also a pretty big mistake. If you look around the league, so many teams just loaded up with pitching. We already mentioned the Brewers and the Rays kind of making up for not getting Tarek Skubal, but the Chicago Cubs also went out and got a bunch of pitching. The Padres went out and got some pitching. They poached Casey Mize off of the Tigers during their fire sale. But then you look at the Yankees and they made trades that included pitchers, but those pitchers were on the way out. They were not coming in. Jake Bird and Yovani Cruz were both involved in the Garcia trade. They were both sent to the Nationals along with two pitching prospects. Also a pitching prospect involved in the Ramos acquisition. And then they traded Doval away for a couple of prospects, a catcher and an outfielder. So zero pitching returns across the board. And Grace, I think I specifically agree with you about Elliot Ramos. Yes, it sort of addresses the situation they have with being a little strapped for outfielders. They decided to send Jason Dominguez down. For me, I'm a fan of that. I think a lot of people were kind of confused when Dominguez also went down with Volpe because Dominguez wasn't having nearly as bad of a season. But I still think Dominguez is nowhere close to being major league ready to play the outfield defensively. There's just too many mental mistakes and little errors out there that you don't feel safe putting Dominguez in that outfield. So without Bellinger and without Judge, you have to kind of have a guy to bridge the gap a little bit. And I think Ramos does that, but it feels very similar to last year's deadline when the Yankees went out and got Austin Slater. And it felt really random and like just like another outfielder for the sake of depth. And that's exactly what the Ramos trade feels like. The big thing for them to hang their hat on is going to be Luis Garcia. The only problem there being they already had a first base platoon. They already had Rice and Goldschmidt kind of trading off every time Goldschmidt got to hit left-handers and then Ben Rice would hit against the righties. Now Ben Rice just almost gets relegated to DH role unless you decide to DH Luis Garcia, but then there's no more room for Paul Goldschmidt unless you pinch hit him later. So it created a jam where one didn't really need to exist in that situation. But again, also Paul Goldschmidt, not necessarily a longer term, definitely not, I would say, a longer term solution to the first base question either. But like say Paul Goldschmidt is gone after this year, now you have two left-handed hitting first basemen, and it's almost the exact same problem as the catching spot. So, yeah, I wasn't really happy with the way the Yankees went about addressing this trade deadline, but still I am cautiously optimistic because of the guys that they will have returning, hopefully either this month or at the start of September. Ideally have a more complete lineup going into the postseason. And I think the ceiling probably could be a trip to the World Series just based solely on the fact that the American League is still as wide open as it is. And we kind of all have been mentioning this a little bit, like the teams that are hot in the American League are still all packed really tightly at the top of the league. We've mentioned the Rays who are solid, but the Yankees are right on their tails within three games in the division. The Red Sox are within three games of the Yankees in the East. All three of those teams are the two that don't win the division more than likely will wind up wild card teams. So that leaves a lot of options open in terms of how to get to the dance. But this bullpen really needed a kind of like just one more piece to kind of finish it off. Not to say that the Yankee bullpen has been bad this year, but probably could have used one more. Mason Miller's name got thrown around a lot this deadline, but the Padres actually retained him and wound up buyers as they should have been. I think I talked about this the last time I was on Nosebleeds, and it didn't make sense to me that people were talking about the Padres to sell and they wound up buying as they should have because they were over 500 and within like a couple of games of the wild card. But I think that just about wraps up everything for like in terms of the deadline for the Mets and the Yankees. We've kind of been skipping over the Mets in terms of like what they're doing now, because again, it's kind of just looking to next year. But the Mets are in Pittsburgh for a series with the Pirates, who have been one of those surprise teams this year. They also bought at the deadline, which is not something you see the Pirates do every year. But quickly, I want to touch on the Yankees' upcoming series against the Atlanta Braves. The Braves are coming to Yankee Stadium. This is a huge test for this Yankees team again in a long stretch of tests that they've had since the All-Star break. They started with the Dodgers, and they've been playing against National League teams for the better part of the last week after a series with the White Sox. Now they get the Braves, who have been an excellent team all year. And Grace and Kurt, I know you guys have experience with the Braves being Mets fans. So you guys have crossed paths with the Braves many a time this year. So I'll start with you guys here going into this weekend. What do the Yankees have to kind of put together to get by this Braves team? Maybe mirroring kind of what the Mets have done. Cause the Mets have had, they've had a couple of good solid series against the Braves this year. I think they won one of those series, against Atlanta earlier this year. But Kurt, starting with you here, what do the Yankees need to do to get by the Braves this weekend?
they could start to attempting to shut down their offense with their pitching staff. I know that that's not always the very easiest thing to do, but I feel like that was a lot of the ways that the Mets, let's see the scores that the Mets had against the Braves this season. I was not sure if I remember the series, but I wasn't sure because they have other ones coming up. The Mets scored a lot of runs in the series, especially when they were winning, when they won 14-3 against the Braves in late July.
I think so just based off that, it doesn't bode well for this Yankee offense that has been struggling to produce runs for a very long time this year.
Well, the other games were 3-2, and the Braves won one of those games 1-0. And then the Mets see the Braves when they're still in New York back in later in the next 2 weeks in August, or it's next week in August. So I feel like it's attempting to shut down their offense, as well as it's going to be probably a pitching duel with this Braves team. So it's going to be quite difficult for this Yankee offense to produce some runs, but I feel like that's going to be the biggest way that they can attempt to beat this Braves team.
I would say you guys have the pitching advantage because you guys have Fried tomorrow, Gerrit Cole Saturday, Cam Schlittler Sunday. So that, I mean, Chris Sale, they haven't said who's pitching this series for the Braves, but if Chris Sale's in there, like, okay, that might be tough. But those three are, that's pretty much the best you can ask for as a Yankee fan against the Braves. I mean, I was saying before that I don't really believe in the Braves. So they didn't have a great trade deadline either. I didn't really love the Tyler Mahle acquisition. That didn't really do much for me, but yeah, I don't know. I think the Yankees eventually are going to break out of their offensive slump. Like, you know, it goes away eventually. And you got, you know, a little bit of excitement with George Lombard and Luis Garcia has been good. Like, it's going to eventually be fine. Like, you know, I know Ben Rice has been a little off lately. He's eventually going to figure it out. He's a really good baseball player. And they figure it out eventually. So I don't know. I wouldn't, you know, put them in for a sweep. But if the New York Mets can take a series off the Braves, I think the New York Yankees definitely can.
And then, Vanessa, after the Yankees dropped the series against the Cardinals at home earlier this week, that Monday to Wednesday series really was just an inning away in that first game away from being a series win for the Yankees. That first game, Luis Garcia's first game as a Yankee, he goes yard. It's a huge moment. They take the lead, and then it kind of just gets away from them in the late innings. Then they won game two, and they wound up losing the series after a tough loss yesterday. But now another interleague matchup. It's the Atlanta Braves, who I would say much, much more complete team than the Cardinals have been this year. What do the Yankees need to put together to pick up a series win here and bounce back from that Cardinals series?
Well, I think the main thing is hits for sure. I just think that they need to wipe away whatever went on during the series with the Cardinals, even though I think they totally could have won the series. But unfortunately, that's not what happened. But yeah, new series, new team, fresh new slate. I'm hoping that it's just an upward trend.
And an off day finally today. As of the day of this recording, the Yankees have a day off, but this was on the back end of playing, what was that, 10 days in a row? So
yeah, they've been nonstop. So I'm hoping that this day off, they got to reset and refresh. We have three great pitchers coming into the series, and I think it could be a very strong one for them. They just have to produce the hits.
Yeah, first off day in the big league career of George Lombard Jr. We'll see how that helps him out on Friday in that first game against the Braves. But that's going to wrap things up for us on this MLB post-trade deadline episode of the Nosebleeds on August 6th, 2026. Thank you so much for joining us and listening in. Thank you to Vanessa Kosuda, Kurt Sippel, and Grace McCarron for joining me, Tucker Austin. Nosebleeds is a production of WFUV Sports. We'll see you next week.